You're listening to another episode of VGCast. VGCast, of course, is our video game podcast where we digest the latest video game news in our change log, chat about what we've been playing in our game queue, and what to look forward to in the world of the video game industry. I'm your host, Brad Johansson. And with me today, as always, is our co-host and buddy, the man who sold himself to the aliens in XCOM, Mr. Troy Giles. What's up, buddy?
You've been doing a wonderful job, Commander Johansson. not much, you know. Just gaming, as usual.
Yeah, you're a big recipient of a huge move. You moved all the way to the northeast side of the country now, man. That went well, right?
Yeah. Yep. No bad weather or anything like that, so I would say it went well.
Yeah, I was gonna have this different intro, but I ended up not going with it. It was going to be like, you know, the man who missed the snow so much that he decided to move up north in the middle of the winter.
Mm-hmm. And we did something like that. And we got no snow.
So. Wow, that's crazy. I would have expected the lots. I heard my friends in Baltimore got tons of snow a week or two ago. So, all right. Well, this is not a snow podcast. This is not Game of Thrones. Winter is not coming to the VGCast podcast. We are here to talk about video games, and we will start our show the way we always do, with talking about the changelog. The changelog, of course, is where we discuss what is at the top of our news feed, our changelog. So what has changed in the world of video game news since the last time we have been on air? Troy, what's on the top of your changelog?
About that. Since the move, I really haven't been able to keep up with the news, guys, so, ooh, you know, ooh. There are a lot of betas been going on lately, which is, I guess, a good thing, perhaps.
Yeah.
Recently, we just got through a beta period for The Division. There's also been signups for both Mirror's Edge, which I don't know how you would do a beta in Mirror's Edge. Is there multiplayer in Mirror's Edge or something?
I hope not. I signed up for that junk.
So, what? Okay. And right now, in fact, today started the Hitman beta for the PS4. Of course, there were betas for Street Fighter V subsequently throughout these last couple weeks. And, I don't know if I can actually say it or not. Well, there's a beta period for Homefront the Revolution, which I got into as well. So, but that doesn't go live until this week. Most of these are closed. You know, you have to sign up for them and everything like that. There's actually been talk of potentially another Division beta coming up later this month, maybe to, you know, edge out a couple, you know, straighten out a couple things, which we'll talk about much later when we actually talk about our, you know, our feelings towards that beta and the game in general. But it's been beta heavy so far. I guess a lot of people are thinking, you know, get a beta out. Not really a demo, because a lot of games are now moving towards that more online-focused gameplay in some way, shape, or form, whether it be cooperatively or competitively, and they just want to let people, you know, stress test the servers, you know, make sure that things are going well and everything like that before they put out a game. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. Case in point, with the Rainbow Six Siege beta last year, it was a couple days before the game came out when they finished off that beta, and the beta was kind of choppy, and the game ran a little bit better, but not as, you know, but it's just been a beta heavy beginning of the year so far.
That's pretty true. Did you you got a chance to play the Division beta too, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, so we'll talk a little bit about that in our when we talk about our game queue a little later in the show. Is there anything else that's on the top of your game queue? Or are you, no, I'm sorry, not your game queue, your change log. Anything else close? Number two, number three, number four? I know you didn't have as much time to pay attention to the news, and that's okay.
I guess the surprising shock of, hey, Red Dead Redemption's able to be played backwards compatible. No, it's not. No, sorry. Sorry, we didn't mean for that. That was a mistake, you know. Xbox decided to Well, they didn't decide to. It got leaked that Red Dead Redemption is going to be on the Xbox One backwards compatibility leaked list that's coming up, along with Castlevania Symphony of the Night and Tekken Tag Tournament 2, which is weird. But apparently there was also the ability to play it a little early, and Xbox quickly took that down before anybody could really get to it. Maybe there was one or two people that got to it, at least enough to make a story out of it. But yeah, it was the most interesting thing. It's like, oh, we're going to be able to play Red Dead Redemption backwards compatible. A lot of people would probably rather have a remastered edition of that, but you know.
Yeah, I don't understand. Are people actually sitting at home just like waiting for the chance to play this game over again on their Xbox Ones without any sort of remaster? It just seems awfully strange that if those people out there that were waiting especially for this game to be backwards compatible, they probably for the last couple of years at least have still had their Xbox 360, because if they really wanted to play this game again, that would have been the only way to replay it, or on their PS3. And so now that they have backwards compatibility, now is the reason to get rid of your 360. I just can't believe that there's enough people out there that that warrant this thing to be kind of a story. I don't really think the numbers are going to be very good. I don't think a lot of people you're not going to see your friends list suddenly fill back up with people going to play Red Dead Redemption. It's a fantastic game, not bashing the game at all. I just don't really see that as a game people go back to, which is probably a case for most of these games, like Tekken Tag Tournament or whatever. I don't really see people going back and playing that, especially now with Street Fighter V getting ready to come out around the corner. But yeah, Regardless, it's still a cool thing. I saw that news story too, and I was like, "What? Why is this a big deal?" No one's going to be playing this. Maybe like 100 people across the country, if that.
I guess the big deal is that, you know, maybe that gives people a little bit more hope that there's possibly a remaster edition coming out around, you know, sometime soon, maybe later or something like that. Because you give people a little bit of hope about something, they may just run with it and just think that, oh, well, they're doing this. Maybe, just maybe, there may be a backwards, not a backwards compatible, but a remaster edition coming up sooner than we think, or maybe an upcoming sequel. Who really knows? It's just hard to say, especially for a game like that. And I mean, I think the only reason that people would actually want to play it on their Xbox One is because there's really no other outlet past the 360 and the PS3, you know, to play it on. You can't even play, it's not even on the PC, which is the strangest thing that's ever come out of Rockstar. Not even freaking table tennis was the strangest thing. It's Red Dead Redemption not on the PC, where the modding community could have a field day.
Yeah, I would think that it would probably be backwards, though, more than likely, because if I was Rockstar, I would probably be like, you know what, don't release that backwards compatible version. Let's sell them on this remaster that we got coming out in June or November of this year, and so we can charge people $49.99 again. That would be probably the better business sense move, but this is also a company that has all of the monies. That was actually a news story recently as well. The financial earnings, I believe, of the online component of GTA 5 is just rolling in cash. And I mean, obviously the game made handles upon handles of cash before the online mode ever even came out. So it makes sense that they got plenty of cash. So maybe they're not really concerned with it. In addition, I think it's Microsoft handling all of the code tweaks for these backwards compatibility bringing these games from 360 to Xbox One back via backwards compatibility. I think Microsoft is the one coding all of that and getting those games, or at least Microsoft Game Studios has been working on that. So maybe it's not really that big of a hit, you know, in terms of financially. It's not Take-Two Interactive or Rockstar having to sit there and recode this game to work on Xbox One. They get Microsoft to do it for free. So that's probably a good thing. Maybe it doesn't hurt their sales for a remaster or a sequel. I don't think it would at all hurt their sales for a sequel, but I think it might hurt their sales if they have a remaster planned. Perhaps it's a little late in the Xbox One and PS4 cycle at this point, I think the remaster window, it has to be shrinking, right? I mean, we can't be having remasters of games going into the fourth and fifth year of these consoles. That would be crazy. So that window, I think, has to be shrinking. And hopefully that's a sequel that we're going to get announced at this coming E3. Wouldn't that be a bomb, man, if Microsoft gets up there or Sony gets up there and says, this is an exclusive. My goodness.
Yeah, it won't happen.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't. Granted, I'm very happy with the Tomb Raider exclusivity because I've seen the screenshots and I've seen that game run on PC. It's certainly pretty. I watched my brother play it at 60 frames per second at 1080p, and yeah, it looks really good. But that Xbox One version, man, it is not far away from the PC version on high or on ultra. The only other difference, obviously, is the frame rate. But that is a pretty rock-solid frame rate on the Xbox One. That's a damn gorgeous game. And that just goes to show that timed exclusivity, it works. That team had plenty of time to get that game developed properly for the Xbox One. And then have plenty of time to make sure the PC version was comfortable and stable. And now they're going to have plenty of time to make sure the PS4 version. So I don't want that to happen either with Red Dead Redemption. I would love everyone to be able to play it as soon as it comes out. But, hey, if they got this huge open world, I would prefer it would be stable on all platforms, whether that's a 3-month stagger or a 6-month stagger, than be like Fallout with save game bugs or Witcher with game-breaking bugs or, you know, Batman's PC version or anything like that. So I would much rather prefer that. I think Tomb Raider worked out pretty well. So moving on, the story that was at the top of my change log was actually a couple of weeks ago now. A journalist, and I forget the publication, it was on the internet. It wasn't like a magazine. Yes, they still have those. It was a guy talking about the future of watching esports could actually be in the hands of VR. And the point that he was trying to make was, right now, I think the biggest problem with esports was that you go to these events, these stadium-like events, so kind of like the Super Bowl, kind of like the NBA playoffs, that kind of thing. And you get there and you're forced to, at that point, just stare at a screen. You can kind of watch the quote-unquote athletes on their computers or on their Xboxes or on their PlayStations. But in reality, you're watching these large screens or you're Twitch streaming it. And that creates kind of a disconnect. It's like going to the Super Bowl to watch a TV. You know, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. You want to watch the performance actually unfold. And in an esport, the performance is technically in the video game. And so what VR could offer is that people at home or even at these events like Evo was the prime example this journalist used. You could put your VR headset on your Oculus or if your HTC Vive, and instead of being in a stadium or instead of being on bleachers at Evo watching three giant projections of three individual matches and six people out in front of you, you could be in the match right beside Ryu versus Ken or Bison versus E Honda. You can be right there in the match in your virtual reality headset, and it will feel as if these characters you have grown up with are fighting right in front of you, as if you're in the boxing ring of two great legendary boxers. And that has kind of blew my mind. Like, oh my gosh, that you're right. Like that could catapult video game sports to something that is you just can't really get in a real life sport. You can't put a camera in the middle of a football field because somebody's going to knock it over. So the user is not going to be able to really be inside of a football game or a basketball game. They'll be able to be on the sidelines, but it won't be able to be accomplished like VR in a video game would be. Imagine watching Dota 2 or League of Legends or Call of Duty and being right there in that, watching these people run across the screen, things exploding, these great plays by these e-athletes, if you want to call them that, doing things like one-shots or no-scopes. That would be, I think, amazing. And I would totally, especially for the Street Fighter thing, I would totally sign up to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be awesome. Oh my gosh, to see a lifelike Ryu kicking the crap out of Dalsium. Like, oh my God, that would be amazing. I would pay money to log in to watch that. I would pay $9.99 or $19.99 as a ticket if it was pay-per-view. Absolutely. What do you think about that, Troy?
I would love to do that, actually. That sounds really fun and interesting. To do that would be a number one reason to get VR in my book.
It would be pretty special, I think, yeah. I think the best thing about this is it seems plausible and it seems possible. This isn't something that I heard about and was like, well, that's never going to happen. That's, the technology is way too advanced to be able to pull that off. It totally seems legit, you know? You already have VR headsets where you can jump into a video game, so why not bake that right into the games going forward where you can just have a spectator? And they already have spectator modes in a lot of games, so just hook up the code for a VR headset and you're good to go. I mean, obviously, it's a lot more difficult than hooking up the code. This is not USB Type-C, but yeah, man, oh my gosh, I heard that and was just like, this is amazing. Is there a game, Troy, that you could think of right now that you'd be like, dude, that would be awesome to watch a sporting event in, like Tekken or Street Fighter, anything other than what I named?
Let's see.
Maybe Pokemon?
Oh, well, that would be interesting. Call of Duty wouldn't be too bad, actually.
Yeah.
Any shooter would be kind of interesting to sit there and like be on the sidelines basically of watching it.
Right.
Going back, like the Titanfall would be interesting. Or some sort of mech shooter or something like that. Or anything with a lot of verticality to it or anything like that too.
Yeah, and if it's like it's life size, so you're like this tiny street level spectator when you're watching these giant mechs like fight through New York City, or if they're fighting a kaiju or something like that, that would be awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, so that was at the top. It's been on my head for many weeks now. But there was something else that has been on my head as well, not quite as important as the story that I just referenced. And that was this news that Eurogamer.net was on the, I guess, conference call with EA. They're allowed to listen into these companies' conference calls that they have, their quarterly reports or whatever it may be. And EA kind of let slip through the cracks that Xbox One had sold 19 million copies of the console, 19 million units, rather. And it kind of blew up on the internet because Microsoft's been awfully quiet with their sales numbers lately, more than likely due to the fact that PlayStation was selling so many PlayStation 4s, there was really no way Microsoft could keep up. And we know that Sony has sold like 32 or 34 million PlayStation 4s, and Xbox now, we think, according to EA, at least that conference call, has sold about 19 million. That's a pretty big difference, almost double. And it kind of took the video game world by storm for a day or so, because it was like, oh my gosh, look how awful Xbox One is doing. And I certainly am not the biggest fan of Microsoft, but the numbers that EA is suggesting Microsoft has sold are really freaking good. I mean, the 360 was considered a success. It was a very well-received console that sold many, many units. The Xbox One, every single month, every single year so far, has sold way more than the 360 did in that lifespan, in that same time frame. So the Xbox One is Microsoft's most successful console by far. And yet this notion that, oh man, they've only sold 19 million units or 18 million, whatever it was, it seems silly. Like, sure, PlayStation is doing very well, but Microsoft is also doing well. They don't have the astronomical numbers, but we're not talking Wii U here, which Wii U, Nintendo released some numbers and they were fairly good. I certainly wouldn't say they're fantastic or anything like that. And they have an additional year on their lifespan right now for their console as opposed to Xbox One and PS4. So that's another issue there. But yeah, man, I read that and was like, why is this a big deal? These are really good numbers for Xbox. I don't really understand. Sure, PlayStation is doing great, but damn, we don't have to just attack Microsoft for doing well. Oh, you're not doing well enough. You hit a home run. We wanted a grand slam. Come on, Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was that was a little harsh. And yeah, I read that and was like, damn, Microsoft, you're killing it. Keep killing it. This is really good news for video gamers that these consoles, Troy, I'm sure you remember, so many people were saying consoles are dead before these consoles came out. They were saying iPad's going to take over, the iPhone's going to take over, the Android tablets, all the gaming is going to shift to these little tablets and these micro consoles.
Yeah, remember that.
And the Ouya. Yeah, and I remember listening to that, like, come on, there's no way. And sure enough, proved a lot of those analysts wrong. The gaming fans, they're massively, wildly accepting these new consoles, and that's great. It's awesome. I love it. I love that they're both doing very well, and it is cool to see this runaway console. And I wasn't quite old enough to appreciate the sales of the PS2, and the PS2 obviously was a very good system seller. It moved units left and right, and it kind of made history in doing that, eventually to be kind of toppled by the Nintendo Wii. That I was old enough to get to kind of pay attention to, but now getting to watch all these consoles, well, at least the top two, doing really well. It's very interesting to watch everything unfold and to see this really successful console and this very successful console kind of compete and duke it out. It's been pretty cool. But yeah, I definitely did not think that was a big issue until everything surrounding the news story kind of bubbled up into an issue, in my opinion. So what did you think about those sales numbers, Troy?
It's ridiculous to hide them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I guess maybe Microsoft just feels like, you know, inadequate.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're not as great as they should be, so we don't want to say them. And to most people, it would be a good thing to have numbers like that. But to Microsoft, it's like, okay, we were top of the heap with the 360, basically. And now with the Xbox One, we're second banana. You know, it's weird to be that way, but at the same time, I can understand their feeling of wanting to just not want to say their numbers because they want to still feel like they're still number one on the block, obviously they're not, but maybe in their minds, they want to keep thinking that way.
Right. And I mean, they're not doing very well in Europe and they're doing awful in Japan.
Yeah. Well, they never do good in Europe though. I don't think.
They've never done good in Japan. That's for sure.
No.
And I mean, we're talking like hundreds of units in Japan. That's how much they're selling on like a weekly or monthly basis. So it's not even in the thousands. I don't think. I think it's like hundreds, like a few hundred a week or something like that. So. But I mean, yeah, they're doing fine. The 360 did not do very well in Japan. The 360, I think, just did okay in Europe. It's nothing to write home about. So I mean, there's certainly lots of room for improvement for Microsoft, and I think they have improved on all cylinders. And it's just kind of an unlucky draw of the hat, I think, because PlayStation has been such a runaway success this generation. If you look back the previous generation, Microsoft had most of everything to lose. They upset a lot of their fans because everyone really liked the 360 and the ecosystem that they had created and the environment that they created and the controller they created and all these things. People really enjoyed that. Sony, on the other hand, started off very slow. They had a lot of problems with their console. Obviously, the Red Ring of Death was an issue with 360 as well, but they had a lot of issues with it being big and bulky and not very attractive console, and the controllers being lightweight, and the Blu-ray drive was expensive, and the hard drive was expensive in the beginning, and should we charge for online play or should we not charge for online play, and all of these things, and server issues on PSN being down all of the time, and they had a lot to gain. When they came out with the PS4, it was, hey, let's fix everything. So it's kind of, it sucks that obviously Microsoft isn't doing as well as Sony, but there's only one that can be doing that well right now. And Microsoft's doing fine. So I don't really think people should jump on the bandwagon here to trash Microsoft for doing very well with their Xbox One sales. So
exactly.
Certainly not. It's not iPhone sales. Neither one of them are iPhone sales, but hey, for video games, it's doing very well. So
And that's all that seems to matter. That's or right. should matter, anyway.
Let's see. We got any more news you want to talk about, Troy? Or you want to jump right into our game queue? We got a lot to talk about in the game queue.
We can jump right into the game queue since we have a lot to talk about on that.
All right. Game queue is where we talk about what we've been playing video game-wise recently. The Division beta has come out. XCOM 2 has come out. I think we both played both of those games. Let's see. Troy, you been playing anything other than those two games?
Not really, no.
Nope. Not really, okay. Well, why don't we start with... let's start with the Division. The Division beta. There's not a lot to the Division beta. I mean, there was some meat there, but it wasn't a full course meal like XCOM. XCOM obviously was a full game.
Yeah.
The Division beta was just that. It was a multiplayer and single-player beta. You played it on which platform, Troy?
I played mine on the Xbox One because the PC requirements were way too high. Well, you know, I don't know how it would, I don't know if it would have been the same on the beta, but I saw the requirements for the actual game, and that is ridiculous for the required ones anyway.
Yeah, it would have been the same, just FYI. Yeah, it definitely would have been. Whatever the requirements were for the beta, they would have been the same for the finished product. That's only a month away. There's no way they would have been able to change the specs like that. So yeah, you definitely would have been probably better off not getting it for PC.
Yep. And I'm pretty sure you did it on the PS4.
That's right. I did it on the PS4. Just a quick reference. Anybody listening, the Division beta gave you the choice to play on which platform, which is why I was kind of curious which platform Troy played on versus what I played on. And the reasons why neither of us played on PC. I personally ended up choosing the PS4. A buddy of mine was also playing a PS4. And he and I and a lot of our friends are having constant issues with our Xbox One controllers disconnecting. And it seems like some days, some weeks even, it's fine. And you have no issues and play for hours. And then other days, it's just like every 10 minutes, it'll just disconnect. And we can't figure out what's wrong. I've tried changing the going to 5 gigahertz band or the 2.4 gigahertz band on our wireless router, and it doesn't really seem to make a difference. I think the controllers are operating on Wi-Fi Direct anyway, so I don't really know what the issue is. Regardless, we were both like, you know what, just to avoid that, we're getting on PS4. There's not a lot of other people in our direct friend circle that's getting the beta, period. So we'll get it on PS4. We don't have a lot of other games for PS4, so screw it. We'll just play it on PS4 and be done with it, see how... we feel with a shooter on PS4. So that's really the only reason we got it. I've seen the comparison shots. The Xbox One uses a dynamic resolution system, but basically every other asset is essentially the same between the PS4 and the Xbox One version. The dynamic resolution makes things just a touch blurry at long distances. It's not super noticeable. But there is certainly a difference. 1080p runs the PS4 version, or the PS4 version runs at 1080p. The Xbox One version is a slight degradation in quality, but it still gets upscaled to 1080p. So it's not really that big of a deal, but there is a difference, at least a little bit, in the graphics. Overall though, Troy, I think you would agree the beta was very smooth on both consoles. I mean, obviously I didn't play it on Xbox One, but the PS4 version was rock solid. And I didn't hear of any issues with the Xbox One version. It was solid, too?
For the most part, there was a minor disconnection. But, I mean, other than that, it was a quick just, okay, well, just back out and just redo it again, basically. But other than that, it was pretty smooth. As far as being able to play the game and everything like that. Yeah, it was smooth. If you can call it a game so far. Boy. This beta. It was definitely a beta. You had your normal level caps that most multiplayer betas will give you. You know, you're only supposed to go up to a certain point. You know, it's blocked off and everything like that. I guess my main issue that I had with it when it came to the playing of it is just it didn't seem to tell you exactly what to do after you did your main mission, which was the hospital mission.
Right.
It's like, all right, that's it. Like, you know, complete the missions that are on the map, and that's pretty much it. I didn't know that if you talk to the people in the bases, both bases, because you could talk to the people at the original base that you start at, and you can talk at your actual base that you build, they'll give you a little, they'll give you some side quests. I'm like, oh, I did not know that. So it was like the last day of the beta when I finally figured that out. But overall, it was a fun game. It definitely shows that it needs to be played with other people. Being by yourself isn't bad. You know, you can play it by yourself, especially during the PvE part. But you can do most of that stuff by yourself. Except, I don't know if you tried the actual main mission on hard.
I did.
Yeah, that was a monster. That was kind of tough. We did. Now there were some issues. I forgot that there were some issues when it came to that. Like some of the enemies were warping around a little bit. Some of the baseball bat enemies were like would appear one way and then appear another way. So it's like, oh, well, that's weird. But yeah, I mean, like I said, that was fun. The real deal came when it came to the Darkness Zone, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, it was me and we had a full team of four all together. A couple buddies on the Xbox, and they had a friend Lair's join in. And from the little bit that we were able to play, it is very interesting when it came to the multiplayer part, the PvP part of the game. Whether it is taking on some of the PvE enemies in there, or hunting down some of the PvP enemies in there that have gone rogue. And, man, those are some firefights.
So, if anybody who's a little confused, the Dark Zone is what Troy is talking about, and it's essentially a zone that's blocked off from the rest of the map. The map in the Division is Manhattan, or essentially most of New York City or part of New York City. And the Dark Zone is an area that once you enter, it's player versus player. Everywhere else in Manhattan, you don't really see other players. You kind of see them at hub areas, like home bases and that kind of thing. And you can play with other players. You can join up with a couple of them here or there. And whoever's in your party, that's who you see. But for the most part, you don't see other players. When you get to the Dark Zone, you see lots of other players. And you have objectives in there, like to attack NPCs, computer-controlled characters, to get experience, to get points, to get them to drop gear. And other players are running around at the same time doing the same things that you're doing. At any point, they can attack you and kill you. At any point, you can attack them and you can kill them. Did you happen to do any of that, Troy? Did you take a moment and like just go renegade and try and kill as many people as you could? Or did you always try and play it safe? Like, how did you attack it?
We tried to play it safe. We wouldn't attack anybody unless they started attacking us first. And they had to be intentionally attacking us, not like caught in the middle of a firefight and accidentally, you know, shoot one of us a couple times to the point where if they go rogue, we're like, okay, well, they've stopped shooting, so let's not continue on. But when there were people that have gone rogue completely, we tried to hunt them down just to take their gear and all that stuff. Right. It seemed to be better to play it a little bit on the path of good, basically, because people were relentless in that game when it comes to rogue enemies and stuff like that. If you mess up in there, they are gunning for you full steam ahead, basically. So we kind of just wanted to be like, okay, nope, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to play it safe, not mess with anybody unless they mess with us first.
Yeah, we were in a party of three, and we had done just about everything else in the beta, and we decided, okay, well, we're going to hightail it over to the Dark Zone. We enter the Dark Zone. We're like, what is going on? We don't know what we're doing. Let's be careful. Oh my God, we see another player. What do we do? What do we do? Oh my God, he's shooting us. So we shoot back at him. Somehow the game got confused, labeled us as rogue, even though we were shot at first. One of us, I guess you have to be shot enough times for the other person to be labeled rogue. Like if it's just one bullet, it won't do anything. It'll still hurt you just a little bit, but it won't actually register the other player as a rogue. So he started shooting on us and we started shooting back. Boom, our whole party is rogue. And we were like, oh crap, what does this mean? So we start moving through the city. People start coming after us. And within 5 minutes, we had the max rating that you could have, the manhunt mode or whatever. And we're laughing hysterically. We're running down the tunnels and the sewages, trying to get away. It's intense. It was fun. It was engaging. And we ultimately died. We lost all of our gear. We had no idea what we were doing. But we were able to last for a pretty long time, just slaughtering other people as they came after us. So that was really fun. And then we, after that, those 10, 15 minutes, we were like, you know what? We're going to play it safe. We're going to be nice guys. We're only going to go after these bad guys, that kind of thing. So we just wanted to explore and just wanted to get gear. And that's ultimately how we ended up playing it. So people, again, if you're out there a little bit confused by this, if you go rogue, you get a timer slapped on your face. And anybody who is in your party also gets a timer. That timer counts down as long as you stop killing people. If you continue to kill other players who are not rogue, that timer then goes up. And when that timer hits zero, your rogue status goes away and you're back to being a white character, as we kept calling it, because your text goes to white. And if you're red or if you're rogue, your text kind of goes red or you have a red icon on it. So yeah. If you're evil enough to get rogue status and you get it for 120 seconds and you manage to stay away from people, boom, you go back to being harmless, right? And your name icon disappears from the map and from the environment. So the only way people know you are you is if they look at you and see your name. So you can run around, have this name like Benjamin or whatever, and kill a bunch of people, be a red player, run into the sewers, lose your status, come back out after your timer's up, and boom, you're a white player. No one else is going to shoot you, at least, you know, unless they want to be a rogue character. But they're not going to shoot you because your timer's run up. I thought that was kind of broken. I understand why they did it, but that kind of bothered me because we saw people run around, kill one or two players, and then boof, vanish, and just wait for the timer to go up, and they're good to go. Then no one else knows if that player is going to be hostile at any point in time because they're just a white player.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to start writing names down. Like, oh, okay, that guy, Peanuts 32. Yeah, he definitely killed everyone about 5 minutes ago. His timer just ran out. Let's keep an eye on that guy because he ain't changing. He's evil. That's a bad dude. So we would have to write these names down and just kind of keep our eye on him. And that kind of bothered me a little bit. Was there anything else in the Dark Zone, Troy, that you noticed that kind of bothered you?
Now, I don't know if this happened to you or not. There were times where we couldn't actually hook our things together to the rope out, basically.
The helicopter, yeah.
Yeah, because in the game, when you actually get some loot, you go to the evac area, basically, you light off a flare, letting everybody know that you're about to evacuate some gear, and then you tie it on to the helicopter and it takes it out. I don't know if you can only do a certain amount of people, because there were people over there that were not even in our group, but weren't hostile, so they let you. It lets everybody who's not hostile or anything just go over there and, well, yeah, you could probably be hostile and do it too, but go over there and just hook up whatever they want. But I don't know if there was like a limit to it. It just seemed like every time there was like six people trying to do it, the seventh person and anybody above that would be kind of screwed. They wouldn't be able to link up their stuff.
We ran into that as well, yep.
Yeah, and there were a little bit of issues where, you know, you hit the X button and you may be like the only people that are over there, and you hit the X button to, on our game, you hit the X button to lift it out and it wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So.
Yeah, that was another, that whole element of extracting your gear was another thing that really bummed me out. And I think is the deepest flaw for the whole game, in my opinion, is that Dark Arena and that extracting your gear element. Because at first you're thinking, to anybody out there, again, who didn't get a chance to play the beta, the whole goal for being in the Dark Zone is to get loot. But the loot you acquire, no matter how you acquire it, whether it's from dead players you killed or dead NPCs that you killed, no matter what, how you acquire that loot, you have to extract that loot, by attaching to a helicopter rather than just walking out the front door of the Dark Zone, because the gear is contaminated. So it has to go up into a helicopter, essentially get cleansed, and then it appears in your item inventory back at like the main base, your stash, essentially. So, but there's also secret vendors inside the Dark Zone.
Yep.
There are a couple safe houses, I think, I think maybe there were only two in the beta, and they sell probably the best gear, at least by random, that you can find. Now, also littered around the outside edge of the Dark Zone borders, the entrances essentially to the Dark Zone, there are also vendors. All of these vendors sell gear via Dark Zone points. So it's a different currency than what you earn in the main game. You can't use the credits that you earn in the main game to buy this gear. This is, think of it as PvP gear from World of Warcraft that you can only buy with special, what were they called, Troy? Was it honor points or something in World of Warcraft that you had to get in order to buy PvP gear?
Yeah, they've gone through so many different currencies now, but yeah, they were honor points by that point, yeah.
Okay, so it's like that. You earn these points, the Dark Zone points, from killing players, killing NPCs, completing missions inside the Dark Zone. Those specific points, those credits then, are then used to buy this gear, whether it's the rare gear or the basic gear, any of that gear that's in the PvP zone. A lot of that stuff, almost all of it, was really good gear, especially in those two secret safe zones. So, I never found gear better than what I could find in those secret safe zones. So if the best gear, I don't need to do anything other than kill players for 25 minutes to get, because that gives you Dark Zone points, just running around and slaughtering people. You can do that and only that. And what we found, and we didn't end up doing this, but we saw many, many people do this every single day that we played this game, is people would camp beside the helicopter points. Not even concerned with gear. Completely unnecessary objective to have. They weren't even concerned with gear. They would be white players. They would just sit and wait for a helicopter to be called in. 5, 6, 7, like you were just describing. White players would show up to get ready to attach your gear. And they would just open fire. 1, 2, 3 players. Open fire and kill everyone. Especially once they started attaching. Because the animation that you enter into when you are attaching your gear to the rope of the helicopter locks you in place, and it prevents you from finishing to get your gear out of there, so you can't even get your gear out of there once you're getting attacked, and B, you can't turn fast enough to get the other player to kill them. So we would watch 5, 6, or 7 players trying to extract gear just get wiped out, and 2 or 3 red guys would just go running off into the distance. There would be a manhunt, sure. But if they ran off and got into something like the safe zone or something like that, they would be okay. They would be free from any danger, and they would have all of these Dark Zone points. Even if they were killed, they wouldn't lose all of the Dark Zone points that they gained. They would only be penalized with a fraction of what they had on them at the time. So it kind of eliminates the whole idea and the whole point of running in there, killing these NPCs, and extracting your gear, because you can very easily just slaughter the other players. Let them kill you, even if you want to, and then just run to the safe houses, get the best gear, and then you're really set, because we wasted hours upon hours trying to grind for gear in there before we finally stumbled on the safe houses, and we're like, oh my god, this is no wonder we're getting killed, because this gun has been in here, and we had no idea that it was there. So that ended up really kind of souring the Dark Zone for me, and it made me not really want to go back. But other than that, I thought the game itself that is underneath this beta is really something special. And I think a lot of the specialness of it is probably worn down because of how popular Destiny was. And there's going to be tons of comparisons to this game and to Destiny because of the loot. And really, those comparisons should be made more towards Diablo. Destiny was very similar to Diablo. This game is very similar to Diablo and other games that have come out since then. But the shooting, it's a cover-based game, and I really like Gears of War, I really like Mass Effect, so cover-based games, I'm right there. The world feels interesting. We will go around corners in Manhattan, and I believe it's a 1-for-1 match in Manhattan, so it feels big, and it feels dirty, and there are newspapers flying around, and there's people who walk up to you and are like, I just want a soda, can you help me? And you can give them a soda, or a protein bar or a candy bar or a bag of chips, and they'll give you, you know, a new baseball hat to wear or a new jacket to wear. And there are parts of the city that didn't get a lot of snow. There's parts of the city where cars are completely covered in snow. There are buildings that are burnt up, buildings that are frozen, buildings that seem fine. And I'm running through this world and I'm just like, this is fascinating. This whole city, and there's nobody in the city for the most part. It's dead. It's we don't have the processing power yet to render these cities with lots of people. But I was running through this city and I was just like, this is cool. This is really, there's stray dogs running around, different kinds of stray dogs. You can go in the manholes in New York City and just run around underneath the city, completely lost. I had no idea where I was going, but it was really fascinating. And the best part is that there were no loading screens. Maybe there are a couple loading screens that are covered up. It's not your traditional like loading screen like XCOM 2 might have, or Mass Effect might have, or Dragon Age. They're kind of covered up in the way World of Warcraft does them. Anybody who's played World of Warcraft, you go to one of those big cities, the big hub worlds, the hub areas, and as you're walking into the main city, you have to walk around like a corner or something to get in. Like there's a wall in front of you and you have to go left or right and come around the wall. That's the game loading the environment behind you. They've been doing that for a long time. Other games have been trying to do that as well. That's what The Division does. You go to enter into the main base. You have to walk around a wall. You have to walk to the right or walk to the left. And your character is forced to walk at that point. And by the time you get around, all the environment behind you, or in front of you rather, is loaded up. So it's virtually no load screens in this game, or at least from what we can tell from the beta. And man, I was definitely impressed. The guns could feel a little bit, I don't know, tighter or more powerful maybe, but it's a beta and they're very early. A lot of the weapons were very low level. You know, max level was like 8 or 9. So even though they were legendaries, there were blue drops, there were rare drops, whatever, they were still like level 8s. So they're pretty weak and they'll probably get stronger. But overall, I was really impressed. And you mentioned, Troy, the hard mode for that hospital mission. It was very hard the first time we played it, but by the time we were done with the beta, it was a cakewalk. By the time we had gotten all those guns that we got from the safe house and things, man, it ended up being kind of a cakewalk. So I'm really hoping that maybe they get some more variations to the missions. So I'm sure they'll have a lot more missions, but I would like to see maybe like a normal mode, a hard mode, and like a very hard mode or something like that. Maybe move normal to easy. And then have a hard be normal, and then have a very hard mode be hard. Kind of like what Grand Theft Auto does in their online mode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they would do with that. I mean, considering that was the first mission that we had. Sure. So, you know, it may just be a set hard mode for that, where it's like, okay, this is, you know, you should be level, let's see, let's say you should be level 7 for the hard mode on it, and if you overlevel, that's your fault for overleveling, then it's not as hard as it used to be, but there are probably going to be other missions you can do. And I doubt they would want to, at least at the beginning, I doubt they'd want to do like, oh, well, you know, this is an extreme hard mode for the beginning mission where you can get items and equipment that is based on the level that you're at, or anything like that, like heroic missions or something like that. That may, you know, that may be farther down the line with expansions and stuff like that. They may, who knows, there may be some sort of raid in this game or something like that where it's like that. So we'll have to keep seeing how this game will go. But I mean, overall, I enjoyed it. You're right, some of the guns can feel a little bouncy. But it was a good overall bounciness for most of them. And I don't know about you, but I lucked out in getting some of the better guns out of just going to like some of the contaminated zones in the single player, where you have to have a certain filter, and you know, you open up a chest and there's a blue weapon in there and stuff like that. I mean, those are some pretty good drops actually to come out of a beta.
Yeah,
pretty much I kept the same gun for the most part once I found it. Like, even though it was like a level 5 gun, the whites, the uncommons and common ones that kept dropping were no better. And the rare ones that did drop were almost up there, but not as good, so, or what I'd want. So it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, I can't wait to see what other weapons they put in and what other attachments they'll put in. Because, I mean, this game is very deep in customization. That crafting wasn't even unlocked in the beta. There were a lot of things that weren't unlocked in the beta. You know, you could only get one mission and open up one wing of your base. So it'll be interesting to see how this game plays out and if it can stand on its own 2 feet without any problems or anything like that. If it launches with barely any problems or anything like that, this is a game that may be one to watch out for. It may be one of those things where I'm tired of Destiny right now. Let's play some, you know, Division or something like that.
Yeah, that was a really well put together beta, and obviously it's a beta. It was a closed beta too, so they are planning on doing a open beta sometime in mid February. So any week now probably. So anybody out there who's listening who is interested in trying the game, look forward to that open beta. I think it's going to be on all three major platforms, and by that I mean PC, PS4, and Xbox One. So I don't see why they would only do it on one or two, or you know, only one other one. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm sure it'll be on all three major platforms, and more than likely it'll be something like you just download the beta on the store, PSN store, Xbox Live store, Steam store, or whatever. Probably going to be on Uplay store if I had to guess, but download the beta and you should be good to go. Probably no code required. But they did say that was sometime in mid to late February. The game is coming out early March, so they don't have a lot of time. It's already a short month as it is, and the day of this recording is February 8th. So they don't have a lot of time, but
literally look forward to that.
Yeah, literally look forward to that probably in the next, I would guess, 2 weeks maybe. And that's probably
hopefully
just
it'll be open.
Yeah, it's probably just going to be an online stress test if I had to guess.
So, yeah, more than likely.
All right, Troy, let's get to XCOM 2 because I know you've been playing a lot of that. I don't know about you, but I am two missions away from beating the game.
Wow. Really?
Yes. Yes.
I haven't been playing it that often to get two missions away from beating the game.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, I haven't been playing anything else, huh?
Played nothing else, man. I got early access to this game. I'll just leave it like that. And yeah, I've been playing the mess out of it.
By early access, you got like a couple hours into it, right? Before it came out.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't even... Okay, let's not have people think that you got it, like, days ahead or anything.
No, but still, 4 or 5 hours early access. That's a lot of game time.
It is.
That's a lot of game time. You know what I mean? That's, like, 5 missions right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, depends. Maybe. depends on if you're not playing really methodical and stuff like that.
I've counted it. It takes probably about 25 to 30 minutes for me to go through... On average, a mission itself, 25 to 30 minutes, you know, with the timers and whatnot in this game, because it's a lot different. You can't quite go as slow as you can in XCOM 1. So then you add in all the base building and researching and repairing people's wounds and building stuff, and you get to about an hour or so in between missions. So maybe it's even less than that. Maybe 4 or 5 hours is like 3 missions. I don't know. What did you think of XCOM 2, Troy?
So far, of what I played it, it's definitely different from XCOM 1 in certain ways.
Yeah.
In a lot of good ways, is what I should say. You know, a lot more guerrilla tactics than it is, like, straight up tactical just shooter. You're more, you know, in this game, they went with the ending, the worst ending from XCOM 1, basically, where the aliens basically take over and, you know, you're a part of a resistance force that do not like the aliens being there and know that they have something sinister up their sleeve instead of what they're calling for peace and love, basically. But, yeah, this game is pretty tight. I like it for the most part. There is some dips in frame rate that I'm not happy about, but, you know, that happens. Can't help that sometimes. And it doesn't take away from the game so much. It's just that same frustration of XCOM where it's like, dang it, he's at 80%. He should be able to hit, and he missed. Why did he miss? Oh, no, my favorite character's about to die. Should I load up a new save, or should I just continue on? And so far, I haven't loaded up a new save.
You're crazy.
What? No. I haven't lost anybody yet either.
Oh, okay.
I'm playing smart. No, now I have had people, now don't get me wrong, I've had people gravely wounded and stuff like that. So they're out for like, and I remember in first XCOM, it didn't seem like it took as long for people that were gravely wounded to come back. But this one, it's like, all right, 20 days. 20 days.
It's ridiculous.
For like my best soldier to come back? 20 days.
Hey, man, it keeps the rest of your soldiers leveling up, I guess. I guess that's the point of the design choice there. But yeah. Yeah, I totally agree, but disagree. I have reloaded at least a dozen times.
What, from people dying or just?
Games like this, these strategy games, especially the turn-based strategy games, I try to be as much of a perfectionist as possible. So even if I expect the character to be gravely injured, I'll try to reload to see if I can squeeze out a better outcome by. I almost use them as if they're cheat codes, which is really heartbreaking when I realize that's what I was doing. But, you know, if I send a character all the way out, expand his mobility all the way out so where I can run way out into the middle of the map, for example, right off the beginning, and boom, he gets surrounded by 6 or 7 or 8 enemies on the very first move, I'll go, reload. And just reload the game, and I won't go that far that time. So it's not always when people are shot or injured. It's when I foresee lots of bad things happening. I'll just go ahead and reload. So,
yeah, I don't blame you, but
I had one of my. I don't know if you do this, but I rename all of the characters to people that I know. So you're in there, Troy. You're one of my colonels already. You're a colonel. My fiance is a colonel. So I rename everybody in there. And the very first mission, very first move, I had one of my good friends. His name's John. He actually died on the very first move of the whole game.
Jeez.
I was like, wow. Well, you know, in the very beginning, you're very weak. You don't have a lot of armor. And if you get out in the open accidentally, whether if a tree blows up in front of you or something like that, you're in for an awful scenario. And right off the bat, the first round, he drops. And I was like, yep, let's reload this. So... Yeah, I've had one person.
But still, Jesus Christ. Very first move and he's just taken out, huh?
Yep, first one. So you like the game, right? Do you like it more than the first one, or is the first one still a better game, or what do you think?
So far I like it more than the first one. For various different reasons. I like the fact that you're just, you know, you're guys that are fighting a war, basically. And you know, that's it. You're not really funded by anybody or anything like that. You don't like the way that things are going on and you want to fight back, and this is your answer to fighting back. And I enjoy that. So far, it just seems a little bit more fun, and I like the whole having to not just take it slow, but sometimes you just got to speed it up. You got to speed it up because if you don't make it in enough time, you know, bad things will happen. And there's this constant thing that's always ticking down or ticking up, whatever you want to call it, that's always in the back of your mind on whether you should do something about it or not. And it's just, you always feel like there's something that you need to do.
Yeah, I don't really know how I feel about whether or not it's better or worse than the first one. I think they're probably right about the same. I think this game improves upon everything that the first one does, you know, with the intensity level, with the base building, with the mechanics, all that stuff. I think it does better than the previous game, which is all you can ask for a game that you really enjoyed. I know you and I both really enjoyed the first one. Lots of people really enjoyed the first one. I know many people who don't have gaming PCs who are like, this is awful that this game only came out on PC because I can't play it. That's not to say this game is not without its problems. One of the most frustrating problem that I had was enemies disappearing. I don't know if you've seen this, Troy, but I've had numerous enemies, different types of enemies, because they have all kinds of enemies, which I love. But I've had numerous enemies just disappear. You know, they'll be in mid-movement where they're moving a position, moving to a different grid or a different square, and they'll just vanish. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they have an ability. It's just the game glitches out. And when that happens, it's not that their physical appearance has just moved and I can still highlight that area and attack. It's that I can't even... The game feels as if... The game doesn't believe anyone is there. So it won't even let me aim in that direction. Well, I might could throw a grenade if I wanted to, but it wouldn't have any effect because the game isn't registering an enemy as being there. And that's actually killed me at one point. It killed one of my characters, to which I was able to reload. Thankfully, the game does a fantastic job of auto-saving like every 5 minutes. But yeah, it ended up getting one of my guys killed, so that was really frustrating. It hasn't happened, strangely, in the second half of the game at all. I haven't seen it happen. I don't know if they stealth patched it through Steam or something. I don't know, but it was happening prolifically in the first half of the game, and it's just vanished now. I have not seen it happen since. But that was my biggest pet peeve, was enemies disappearing, because I was like, this is ridiculous. I've had a couple cases of the camera getting stuck, which is frustrating. I've had lots of little bugs. So there's none of these bugs that I've had are game breaking or save crashing or anything like that. There are people who are on Reddit and NeoGAF that have been saying they're having crashed to desktops. I haven't had any of those crashes to desktops. I've been really fortunate. I don't know if it's Windows 10 or if it's, you know, DirectX being updated or if it's the graphics card being updated or what it is, but I've had zero crashes, which is really good. But there is a little bug that if I move my mouse too far down to the bottom of the screen and click, it doesn't click on the Windows 10 desktop, but the game acts as if I clicked off of the game. And so the audio mutes and everything's still going on, but my mouse is no longer in the game window. And even if I lock the mouse into the game window, which you can do in the options, it still doesn't fix it. So I don't know what that is. And I've had issues with pop-ups, for example, getting removed. You know, things pop up on your screen and say, hey, this is what this is. And I've had an issue where other pop-ups popping up in the game will remove the former. And so I've missed out on a bunch of things. Up until about two missions ago, I didn't even know that the rooms that you can clear the debris out of, the ones towards the bottom, I thought you needed three engineers to clean them out. I just learned recently, like today, that it's not three engineers. It's that one can do it. It's just the other two help out and reduce the time. So I only recently got a PsyOps lab, so I haven't really tried any of the PsyOps stuff because I thought I had to find more engineers, and I couldn't find any more engineers. So I don't have I think it's the auto turret thing. Maybe, no, it's the workshop. I don't have the workshop either. I don't have one of those. So the game has a problem, I think, really telling you what you need to be doing properly, or, you know, kind of explaining some of the other mechanics. I think it has some issues with that. And right off probably the first hour or two, good God, this game handholds and handholds and handholds and is like, are you sure you want to cross the street, Troy? Are you sure? This is the 15th street we've crossed. Are you sure you want to cross by yourself now? And man, oh, that was annoying. But when it finally does let you go, you're back in XCOM and it's really, really good. But Jesus, they could not let me go fast enough. I was just squirming in my chair, like, let me go. Stop doing this. I don't know if your game was exactly the same, but I had two of the basic characters die in like the first
level. Yeah, I think that was supposed to happen.
Yeah, it's scripted, and like everything for like the first hour and a half after that point, I think everything else is scripted as well. And that was kind of a bummer because I just wanted to be let free, man. Just let me build my base.
They wouldn't let you do that. That's too easy.
Yeah, so I have some issues with the game, but I think the game underneath all these bugs and little problems and whatnot is a better game than the first one. I just think the total package, if I had to rate, would probably be the same rating as the original XCOM, because that game didn't have anywhere near as these little micro bugs, as I like to call them, that are really mucking up the process of just having a lot of fun. So all in all, I think they're probably both about the same in terms of quality, But if the game under this, underneath this one, once it gets patched up, you're going to have something special, I think. And story's pretty good. I don't know how far along you are, Troy, but every time one of those little cutscenes happening, I'm engaged. I want to know more. I want to know what the scientist is doing, what the engineer is doing. It's pretty fascinating. What did you think about it?
It's interesting. So far, so good. It's, sure. It's keeping my attention, you know. Like I said, the aliens are working on a certain project. I haven't really gotten any further into that yet, but, you know, and they haven't introduced too much so far to me just yet as new alien types or anything like that. But I do have to applaud the alien types that they do have, even the evolutions of some of the ones that they had in the original game. They're a lot better and a lot creepier, especially like the what are they called? The tall gray, the small gray ones that were in the first game now are tall and spindly. Yeah. And like vicious looking. It's like, oh wow, this is different from the first game. You know, they weren't as menacing before. Now they just seem, you know, terrifying. In a game world, anyway. They're not really terrifying in my eyes. But if I was an XCOM soldier out there, it would be interesting. It would be terrifying to see one of those out there on the field of battle, basically.
Which is something that can happen to your characters, which is really fascinating. They can see one of these hulkish monsters that the aliens have created, and they'll start panicking, and they'll run away, and you can't control them. It's pretty... I had one guy actually panic so hard, he shot at the alien, and he killed it. And I was like, well, that worked out in my favor. But, yeah.
Yeah, I've had that happen a couple times.
That's awesome. I love it when that happens. But, yeah, they can get terrified on their own of these characters, and it's pretty fascinating. I keep thinking, though, man, would this make a good game for the Nemesis system, right? Like, if you had some aliens out there that you could like kill, but they didn't really die, or if they like killed some of your squad mates, like they would get promoted and they could like flee from the battle. Like, oh, I could totally see the Nemesis system made famous by Shadow of Mordor, in case anyone's forgotten. Yeah, this would be a good game for the Nemesis system.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm.
You can almost plug in anything for the Nemesis system and it would make it a little bit better.
Yeah. How do you feel about no controller support? I mean, they do have controller support. It's for one controller. It's for the Steam controller. But did you ever find yourself wanting to play it with an Xbox controller? Or
not really.
No? Pretty not happy really. With the PC controls?
Yeah, it's okay with a mouse and keyboard. I will say that once they probably enact the controller support, that will guarantee that it will be heading to a local system. It'll be heading to an Xbox One and a PS4.
Okay, that leads me to my next question. Do you think, I guess you're probably already sold on that idea. You think they're going to do an Xbox One or PS4 version of this game?
More than likely. I would think so.
Time frame?
That's a good question. Maybe, but I wouldn't be surprised with like within this year. But it'd be like the end of the year or something like that, because
maybe like a November game of the year or definitive edition or something like that.
Maybe if not until maybe wait until next year or something for it, because I don't know if it's going to do the numbers that they want on just PC. It could very well do the numbers that they want on PC, but right now I'm not entirely sure if it will or not.
Yeah, I think it comes out in November of this year. If not, then it gets pushed into next year. I think it'd be crazy to not release this game on consoles. I don't see how, with them being even more so like PCs now, I don't see how they could skip that. I'm sure they had to sell at least 1 million or so copies on the consoles of last gen for this game. So I don't see how they missed that, other than the small team. They clearly had issues making this game. So yeah, I think it's coming, but I wouldn't expect it in the next couple of months. I would certainly wait to see it. Maybe the end of the year, maybe early next year. So, all right. So, unless you got anything else to say about XCOM, Troy, I'm just going to talk for a second about Magicka 2. And by a second, I really only mean a few seconds. Magicka 2, man, it's good. It's real good. I played the first one with a good buddy of mine, and we had a lot of fun with Magicka. It was for PC only at the time. I think it's still only PC. And in that game, you are, I think it's 4-player co-op. You can combine elements, just you yourself. So you can cast a fire spell and a water spell, shoot them out, and they make steam. Or you can shoot fire, your co-op partner can shoot water, and boom, you make steam. That's just one of the combinations that you have. The second game, Magicka 2, has been out for a while on PC and PlayStation 4. I finally got a chance to play it with a buddy of mine because I bought it, but I've been waiting for the opportunity to get to play it on PS4. Originally, I was going to get my fiance to play it, but she didn't show a lot of interest in this game. So I've been waiting for someone else to get it, and someone else got it, and we've been playing it. And it's fun, man. It's real, real fun. It's got me excited for whenever PlayStation releases their PlayStation Plus free games, which may be out now, actually, now that I think about it. Because one of those PS Plus games for PS4 is a game, I think it might be called Helldivers. And it is made by the guys who made Magicka 1 and Magicka 2. So they do good work. Magicka 2 is, it's a really good game. Very similar to the first one. It's funny. They make a bunch of pop culture references. The combat's really smooth. This combining of spells is really cool. The graphics are solid. It's very simple. You don't have to expect, you know, photorealism or anything like that. And they give you the ability to change your voice. And one of the voices is, imagine the Sims voices, but now if Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing the Sims dialogue, that's actually one of the choices you can pick. And it's literally called Arnold. Like that's the option when you're flipping through the voices that you want your magician to sound like. It's just called Arnold. And then because they don't speak English, these little magicians, they speak Sim talk essentially, but it sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger doing a Sims impression. And it's pretty hilarious. So, but it's a good game. It's probably 14 or 20 bucks on PS4. I would guess it's probably less than 14 on Steam. Currently, there's a sale going on. I don't know if it's part of that sale or not, but I would imagine anybody out there who's curious to play it on PC, it's probably cheaper to play on PC than it is on PS4. So, other than that, though, we don't have a lot of time to talk about everything else I've been playing because the last time we were on, I hadn't really gotten into Bloodborne, or maybe I had and we hadn't had a chance to talk about it, but I've been playing a ton of Bloodborne, which I'll save for the next podcast. I beat the game. I have to talk about this game. I have to talk about it. Because I have been pushing this game off for our podcast for like over a month because we haven't had time. So I'm going to talk about it right now. I played this game on the Wii U over the holidays. To be more specific, over the New Year's. And the reason I started getting it is because a lot of people were playing. We had way more gamers in the house than the consoles would allow us to play. So we ended up having a lot of people playing PlayStation at one time, a lot of people playing Xbox at one time, that kind of thing. So there wasn't a lot of room at certain times for me to get in there to play a game, which is fine. We were all taking turns. But in between those turns, I brought my Wii U up there so we could all play Smash, which we did. And I pulled the Wii U out and I was like, you know what? I don't really pull my Wii U that much. So I'll check the store, see if they got any sales. I did. And boom, I stumbled upon Fast Racing Neo. Dude, that game, I have no idea why Nintendo has not made an F-Zero game in years. But if anybody likes F-Zero, that game, Fast Racing Neo, is essentially a spiritual successor to F-Zero. And it is fantastic, dude. It is smooth. It is fast-paced as hell. And it uses an Ikaruga-style color codeness type thing. Did you ever play Ikaruga, Troy?
Play a little bit of it.
Dreamcast, maybe, on arcades. Yeah, your spaceship, you're in a space, it turned, I think it was, maybe it was white and black or gold and black or something like that.
It was white and black.
Okay, so if you were white, then white energy from the enemy could not hurt you, it would heal you. But if you were black and white energy hit you, then you would die, and vice versa. So it's just like that, but it's blue and orange. So if you are an orange energied or energized car and you run over a blue strip of turbo, you slow down. And so you have to switch your car over to a blue energy in middle of that in order to get the boost. And it is so fast paced and it so hard. It's like frustratingly hard, but in a good way, like almost like in a Souls game kind of way. You get your butt kicked the first time you do a new circuit, similar to Mario Kart. They have four or five races in a circuit, and they have multiple circuits, maybe probably six or seven, maybe even more than that, more circuits than that. A bunch of different cars you unlock as you race. It's fast. It's beautiful. The vistas, the levels are incredible. I mean, we're not talking about Final Fantasy 15 here in terms of graphics. We're not talking Uncharted in terms of graphics. We're not talking Tomb Raider. But the Wii U, these developers really were able to push this console. It looks like it would appear on an Xbox One or a PS4 probably. And it runs buttery smooth. And I can't say enough about it. I boot it up probably every other night when I'm feeling a little bored with whatever else I might be playing. Just jump on the Wii U console on the little tablet and I'll do a whole circuit. Just race through four or five races on that circuit. Boom, be done. Get first, second, or third. Because you cannot play the other circuits until you advance through the other circuit. So you have to play the first one before you play the second one. You have to play the second one and beat it one, two, or three, third place before you can jump to the third one. So it's quite the challenge, but man, is it a good game. And the beauty of it is retails on the Wii U store for like $14.99. It's not expensive at all. Anybody out there who has a Wii U, if you even remotely like racing games, this is a fantastic racing game. And baffles my mind why Nintendo has not done an F-Zero game. So maybe they're too busy doing remasters of the Zelda games, is probably why. Because we're getting a new Twilight Princess Zelda HD makeover, which is going to be sold for $50, man. Can you believe that?
$50 for a remake?
$50.
The third remake of that?
The third remake, yeah.
Oish.
Oh my gosh, $50, man.
It's a little too much.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's
a lot too much.
At least with Uncharted and Halo, you know, you got three or four games with it. I think with Halo you got four, Uncharted you got three, and that even still, they basically bundled that game with their consoles. This isn't even getting bundled. Ugh, it's frustrating, man. I don't see how anybody is expected to pay $50 for an HD remaster for a console that is like technically sub HD. So,
hey, your guess is as good as mine on why people are doing it.
All right, well, that's a good transition into what to look forward to. Troy, you got anything coming up? Is it the Homeworld beta? You're in that, aren't you?
Not Homeworld, Homefront.
Homefront. That's right.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something to look forward to. I mean, the last one wasn't that good, but this one's giving me more. Like XCOM doing the whole guerrilla tactics thing, basically you hit and run and stuff like that. So it might be kind of good. You know, it's something to look forward to, I guess. Other than that, I got Firewatch to play tomorrow, which will be interesting.
That'll be interesting.
Hearing some things about it. And other than that, I guess, unless there's something, well, I don't know about Far Cry Primal. That comes out this month, too.
Oh, that's right. It does.
So there's quite a bit of games coming out, but yeah. It's just like, which ones do you have enough money for to pay for, and which ones are you going to actually have fun playing? Because Street Fighter V comes out this month as well.
And then at the beginning of March, you have Dark Souls 3. Actually, the 16th.
Yeah, well, it's okay. It's Dark Souls. I mean, you know, like I said, it's Dark Souls. Yeah, Far Cry is February 23rd. Potentially Quantum Break, as long as it turns out to be pretty good, is April 5th.
Got The Division.
Yeah, The Division in March 8th.
Yeah, so there's actually a lot to look forward to. With you're going to be playing Firewatch. Uh-huh. I don't think I'm going to get Street Fighter. That's a PS4 exclusive, so I don't think you're going to be able
to... Yeah, PS4 or PC exclusive. So,
okay. Yeah. I'm definitely getting The Division. That's still at least a month away. I plan to get... I'm curious. I want to hear what you have to say about Firewatch first before I dive in. So hopefully we can talk about that on our show the next time we record. But I think the big elephant in the room is probably The Division coming in a month, and then I am pretty much sold on the Souls games now, Dark Souls. So I'm probably going to get Dark Souls 3 as long as it feels like Bloodborne. Bloodborne, once I got the hang of that game, dude, it's fantastic. It's not game of the year or anything like that, but because it came out last year, obviously last February, I think I'm about a year late. But yeah, it was real, real good. Had some fun with that game.
Well, from what I've heard, it's about Dark Souls 3. It is taking some of the better parts of both.
Yeah.
You know, Dark Souls, Dark Souls 2, Demon Souls, and Bloodborne, and putting them all together basically in one game. So, you know, you should be kind of sold on that.
Maybe by the next time we record, if nothing else is quite released yet, you got your Firewatch talk. I can talk a little bit about Bloodborne. I have another game I've been playing a little bit too that I'd like to talk about at some point. That Super Mario 3D Land on the 3DS. I was able to get that for Christmas actually, and on the trip up to Baltimore that I went on for New Year's Eve, I got to play a bunch of that game because it's like a 9-hour drive there and then another 9-hour drive back. So I got to play a bunch of that and I really enjoyed it. And then maybe perhaps, I don't know if you've read this book. This is strange being on a video game podcast, but I thought it was relevant. I had jury duty today and I had to wait for a very long time. I got to read a bunch of Ready Player One, which I have not talked about I've never read before. So perhaps we can talk about that next time on the show as well, because that is essentially the author foretold the future, which is VR and Oculus Rift. And he did it 6 years ago or something like that. So it's essentially about VR, and it's pretty fascinating. It's interesting to think about where we are right now in VR and look at this book. It's pretty fascinating. So if you don't have anything else, Troy, we'll go ahead and wrap up. I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
All right. As always, if you guys like what you see, like what you hear, please give us a thumbs up, a like, a review, and or a rating to show us some support. Feel free to subscribe via iTunes, via Podcast Addict, which is my recommendation on Android OS, or simply via Podomatic.com. Thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode. And as always, you guys, keep gaming.